Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. Today we're speaking with Dr. Stavros Zanos, who obtained his Doctor of Medicine from Aristotle University in Greece. He served as a general medical practitioner and a military physician before training in internal medicine and cardiology. He also earned a PhD in neuroscience and physiology from the University of Washington School of Medicine, where he served as senior fellow and instructor. He joined the Feinstein Institutes for Medical Research as an assistant professor in 2017, where he leads the translational neurophysiology lab at the Institute of Bioelectronic Medicine. He is currently an associate professor at the Feinstein Institutes for Medical Research and at the Donald and Barbara Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Washington School of Medicine and at the New York Institute of Technology. Dr. Zanos is the author of more than 65 peer-reviewed publications. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Zanos.
Hi, very glad to be on the podcast as well.
So much of your research focuses on neuromodulation. Can you explain how that works at a physiological level?
Well, the real answer is we don't know yet. We have some clues, we have some indications, but the real mechanism by which ultrasound activates neurons and nerves is a matter of research. But it must have to do with mechanosensitive channels and receptors on the membranes of neurons. So these are ion channels. These are proteins that are on the membrane. And for one reason or another, they are activated by mechanical stimuli. And it turns out that for some of those ion channels, the ideal mechanical stimulus is in that ultrasound range. It's, I guess, you can call it a coincidence, a happy coincidence, that we have devices that emit mechanical pressure at that frequency, in that range, that happens to activate these proteins. And what happens downstream of that, again, is a matter of research. But in the end, what happens is these neurons are activated, or maybe in some cases inhibited. But that's the biophysical basis of how ultrasound activates neurons and how ultrasound neuromodulation works.
And you recently published a study using neuromodulation to treat pulmonary hypertension. What prompted you to study this condition, and what were your key findings?
Well, we're quite excited with the positive findings we had recently. We published recently in pulmonary arterial hypertension. That's a difficult disease to treat. It's a disease that is fatal. It affects primarily young women. Unfortunately, the prognosis for these people is not that great. And that's despite the fact that there are a lot of disease-specific treatments for PAH, for pulmonary arterial hypertension. But they don't really change the natural history of the disease, meaning they don't affect the long-term prognosis. These people, a lot of these people, will end up dying of heart failure. We thought of ultrasound to treat the disease for two reasons. One was a collaboration that we had at the time, and we kept that collaboration ongoing for several years with General Electric Research. So they were and are still developing ultrasound systems for neuromodulation in addition to imaging. At that moment, we were setting up the research collaboration with their team. And the second, I guess, reason was this discussion we had with a company, pharmaceutical company, of all companies, that was interested in pulmonary arterial hypertension. The company is called United Therapeutics, and they provided some funding for a bioelectronic treatment of the disease of pulmonary arterial hypertension. So it was, again, maybe a happy coincidence that those two discussions occurred at the same time, and that's how it all started. I think, with given that in our preclinical work, again, this has to be tested in human subjects, obviously, but given that in our preclinical work, we found that this treatment actually changed the disease progression. It slowed it down because the effects were sustained beyond the discontinuation of treatment. We think it's a very reasonable next step to perhaps test it in a small, very carefully selected cohort of patients with the disease for some amount of time. It could be weeks, it could be months. These are details that I guess the clinicians who take care of these patients know better, and see if we can replicate these findings. Not just suppressing inflammation, like we saw last year in the healthy subjects, but this time actually affecting the disease. And that would be a huge win. And it could also be a first test of this treatment in any cardiovascular disease. And even though pulmonary arterial hypertension is fatal, it's not extremely common. So this could be the first test of this treatment in this family of diseases, cardiovascular diseases, some of which are extremely common. And the disease burden in those diseases is huge. And the potential benefit from such a treatment working is also quite significant.
And in 2023, you published the findings of a 60-participant clinical trial using neuromodulation of the spleen to reduce inflammatory markers in healthy subjects. This was the first study of its kind, right?
Correct. It was the first in human study. Of course, it was done in healthy subjects. But the idea was that before we start applying this treatment in different diseases, in different cohorts of patients with specific diseases, we wanted to know if all of this preclinical work that we and others did in animal models could somehow translate into an anti-inflammatory effect in humans. And you can think of many reasons why that wouldn't work, one of which is size. Humans, you know, they're much bigger than rats or mice, and their spleen is at a different distance from the skin compared to the spleen of rats or mice. So there were all these parameters that we wanted to check that still allowed this treatment to be effective. So we tried it. It was image-guided. It was, again, in healthy subjects. We took blood samples before and after the treatment, and it was just a few minutes of ultrasound insonification of the spleen. And we found that in those people that actually received the ultrasound energy, their blood cells, their white blood cells, released 3 to 4-fold less cytokine, inflammatory cytokine called tumor necrosis factor, TNF, than those subjects in which we had delivered some treatment, some ultrasound, basically the probe on the skin without turning it on. So that was a very significant drop in a cytokine that is important in a lot of inflammatory diseases, one of which may be pulmonary hypertension, which was one of the reasons why we thought it was directly translatable to humans with this disease and possibly other diseases as well.
And what are some of the diseases and conditions that these findings would impact?
Well, I want to think that potentially any disease or condition in which immune dysfunction and inflammation that is impacted by the innervation of the spleen is important. One example is rheumatoid arthritis. This is an inflammatory, chronic inflammatory disease that in one way or another, a lot of groups, academic groups and companies are targeting with bioelectronic medicine, not necessarily ultrasound, but also with electrical stimulation of the same circuits. So that's an example that could be targeted with ultrasound. Inflammatory bowel disease. That's another disease that has been tested with bioelectronic treatments. My personal interest and my lab's interest is cardiovascular disease. So we know that a lot of chronic cardiovascular disease, like heart failure, hypertension, and pulmonary hypertension, and even arrhythmias, they have a very significant inflammatory immune dysfunction component. So it would be really nice if this treatment could be tested in some of those diseases that are not uncommon. There are millions of people with heart failure, hypertension, and arrhythmias in the U.S. and all over the world. So these are very big diseases with a huge impact on public health.
The Feinstein Institutes is one of several centers studying the potential of using focus ultrasound to treat type 2 diabetes. Can you explain how that works and where you're at in the research process?
Right. So that was a very interesting number of studies. It wasn't just one study that we conducted at Feinstein, my lab, Kevin Tracy and Sangeeta Chavan's labs, with GE Research. And other groups from other parts of the country. The idea was that if we can activate neurons that innervate the liver and essentially inform the brain of the presence of hyperglycemia, meaning increased blood glucose, then maybe we could trick the brain into thinking that, thinking within quotes, that there is increased glucose in the system, which means now the brain has to mobilize other systems, hormonal and neural systems, to bring glucose down. So by doing that regularly and targeting those sensory nerves, we would basically trick the brain into lowering glucose, even if glucose was not extremely elevated. So it was a big, I think, big news for the community, big news for bioelectronic medicine, and big news for diabetes, for the diabetes community. The next step now in that big project is that I'm aware of clinical studies that GE Research has been undertaking for a while now. And I'm really looking forward to hearing more about the results of those clinical studies, because if it is positive as the preclinical work we did, that would be very big news for a lot of diabetic people. And again, we have this question, how do we translate it into a commercially viable product that can reach millions of people in the world? That's something that is not my specialty, but it's the same questions. You know, how do we get it into their homes? How do we make it easy so they or their families can administer this treatment in a very reliable manner? Those are all very important questions that I'm sure they're addressing right now.
Right. I'm sure sometimes it can be frustrating having this incredible research, knowing the potential that's there, and, you know, having the other side of it where, you know, you're seeing what kinds of products need to be developed. And like you mentioned, how can this be sustainable to patients?
I mean, it's frustrating if it takes forever to happen. I think at this point, there is a lot of enthusiasm in the field both companies and academic teams and the NIH really believe in it. So I don't think it's going to be on one of those cases, one of those stories where things just don't move along and everybody gets frustrated and eventually people lose their hope. I really think that this is a technology that will have some translational significance. When I say technology, I mean focused ultrasound of peripheral nerves and neurons in the abdomen. I put all of that under the same umbrella because I know focused ultrasound has a lot of other uses in spinal cord, in the brain. This is something quite specific to the autonomic nervous system and to the neurons and nerves of the abdomen. Because the abdomen is a much easier structure for ultrasound penetration than the skull, for example, I feel that the progress in this area will be a little faster, perhaps.
And what's the overall goal for your work?
Ultrasound neuromodulation is one way to change the activity of those autonomic neurons in the abdomen and affect how they regulate immune function, how they regulate metabolism and homeostasis in general. But electrical stimulation is a standard way of activating or suppressing the activity of the same circuits. We explore that as well. So those two are both equally important ways we believe that will be applicable in the future, maybe applicable in the future in the treatment of diseases with an inflammatory component. We also are very interested in the inflammatory component itself of those diseases. So what is the basic biology of immunity and inflammation in especially in cardiovascular disease? Pulmonary hypertension is one example. There is inflammation, there is immune dysfunction, and we want to understand what the role of the spleen, the innervation of the spleen, all these neurons in the abdomen that speak to each other and form autonomic circuits, what role do they play in the pathogenesis of the disease? Pulmonary hypertension is one example. Pretty soon we may be looking at additional cardiovascular diseases like arrhythmias and heart failure. There is very strong evidence that they are a big component of the pathogenesis of these diseases involves immune dysfunction and perhaps even involves the spleen. So going back full circle, now that we know that, or once we establish that, well, what are the methods we have to modulate the activity of the splenic nerve? Ultrasound is one example. Electrical stimulation is another. So I would say, I would summarize the work in the lab under this big umbrella of, understanding the involvement of the autonomic nervous system in the pathogenesis of these diseases and how we can activate different components of the autonomic nervous system to treat these diseases effectively.
You received a grant from the Focus Ultrasound Foundation in 2021. Can you tell us about that project?
That was a very interesting project. Leveraging some of the knowledge we gained through our work with GE on the liver. And we wanted to see if we can translate this into a very specific condition, which is called postoperative hyperglycemia. So a lot of people who undergo big operations, abdominal operations, they have, their metabolism is dysregulated because of the surgical stress. And, the next day after surgery, for weeks, maybe months sometimes, they require a very intensive treatment for their hyperglycemia. They develop insulin resistance. Again, based on the results we had with the studies with GE, we wanted to see if we can maybe show that ultrasound of the liver could have a similar effect in this very particular scenario, postoperative hyperglycemia. But we learned something very interesting, that when we targeted the nerves of the spleen at the hilum of the spleen, the porta hepatis, of the liver, at the hilum of the liver, at the porta hepatis, the effect was as expected. When we targeted the neurons that provide those fibers to the liver, the effect was reversed. So that, to us, meant that ultrasound obviously has an effect. We kind of knew that, expected that. But it kind of drove the message that we really have to know where we're targeting, what we're targeting with it. Not every place in the abdomen has the same effect on a specific homeostatic mechanism, which kind of stresses the fact that we need relatively smart devices if we want to give these devices to thousands and maybe even millions of people in the future. They need to be able to know that they're administering the ultrasound energy to one particular target and not something else that they shouldn't. It's safe, but that doesn't mean it has, the same effects anywhere you turn it. So we're working on increasing that sample size. The last year, we've made some progress on that. So I hope in the next maybe 6 months to a year, we'll have a publication on that. We're very thankful for the Focus Ultrasound Foundation for that work. It really opened our eyes when it comes to how precise you have to be with these neuromodulation methods.
Well, thank you so much for sharing about your work and joining us here on the podcast. It's been so great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.